Please welcome Senator Young.
Thanks. Well, thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate it. It's a privilege to be here. I want to thank all of those who helped organize this event. Brenda, you in particular. Thank you. Why don't you give Brenda a round of applause? She put this thing together. Yeah. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. This is a really valuable period of time for me as your elected representative. Typically in August, as members of the United States Senate, will take the entire month off. We call this a district work period as opposed to a recess, because the word recess among children and I think adults sometimes elicits ideas of monkey bars and curly slides and so forth. But I had an entire month worth of visits laid out to our 92 counties, traveling around to hit as many as I could, but we're having to compress into roughly a week and a half, an entire month's worth of visits. So my team, I love them, but they're working me hard. We're going to about 30 events in 20 different counties, and this is meaningful. This is where I receive feedback on things that Congress has done, is in the process of doing, or has not done, as the case might be. I learn more about people's dreams and aspirations and challenges and hopes and perspectives. And I do a lot more listening, frankly, than I do talking, which I think is a valuable skill in our elected leaders. And my intention here today, since I was asked to provide some remarks, is in fact to speak, but I really will welcome your questions on the back end of my remarks and look forward to hearing what's on your mind. So I thought I'd give you an update on some of our accomplishments as a country and as a Congress, specifically as the United States Senate, since I came into office roughly almost 20 months ago now. We've gotten a lot done, which may contradict your impressions. It's certainly inconsistent with a lot of the things we see on certain media outlets, whether you're watching Fox News or MSNBC. Washington is portrayed as a polarizing place that doesn't get things done, and there's a measure of polarization. I have to acknowledge that, but we've gotten quite a bit done. In fact, a historic amount of work has gotten done, and I'll be talking about a number of these accomplishments. And then, towards the tail end of my remarks, my hope is I can share with you just a brief amount of information about what I'm calling our fair shot agenda. So I was asked by a reporter not too long ago why it is that Congress can't get anything done. And this, I have to admit, is somewhat of a frustration to me because of all the things I'll get to momentarily. But I also admit to being frustrated when we can't get big things done. There remains a lot of work to be done with respect to immigration reform and health care costs, and you could certainly add to the list. But this is something that we've run into throughout American history. Our productivity waxes and wanes. In fact, our system of government wasn't designed to be efficient. In fact, it was designed to be inefficient. The most efficient form of government, King George, was familiar with it at the time of our nation's revolution and founding. So that was top of mind when the system of checks and balances was put in place, when the separation of powers was established. And I think it bears reminding that we're working with a system that I still think is relevant and important to protecting our liberties and advancing our shared interests as a country, but there is a downside to this structure of government, and it's that sometimes we can't get as much done as quickly as we would like. Now, with that predicate laid, let me just dive in. Here's a rundown of some of the things we've gotten done, and I'll start with the basics. We may actually pass the 12 appropriations or spending bills that Congress is tasked with passing each year. Now, if that sounds mundane to you, if that sounds banal, run-of-the-mill, it is. But it hasn't happened since 1997. So Congress is actually starting to work. I think we're at 9 or 10 right now. We may get to 12. But we've made significant progress, especially as compared to the 6 years I spent between 2011 and 2016 in the U.S. House of Representatives. We've reformed America's tax code for the first time in 31 years, as was mentioned in my introduction. And this puts more money in the pockets, not just of our investors, not just of our business leaders and our shareholders, though that's not a bad thing. But this is benefiting in a really substantial way rank-and-file Hoosiers, Main Street Hoosiers. And you're reading about this, you're hearing about this. My suspicion is you'll be hearing even more about this in coming months and years as the tax reforms actually go into effect. You see, we've just passed the legislation. Sometimes folks forget that, but it goes into effect next year. But the mere passage of the legislation has changed the hurdle rate on businesses' investments, and there's all sorts of good things that are already happening. So rather than go down the litany of companies that are offering wage increases and benefit increases and increasing investment in their communities and so forth, I thought I'd just give you an example of one human being. That sort of personifies why I voted for tax reform and what will continue, I believe, to happen in coming years on account of this tax reform effort. Her name is Chelsea Hatfield. I have permission to use her name. She was my guest at this year's State of the Union address. Chelsea's a bank teller for First Farmers Bank and Trust Company. And she works out of their Tipton branch. Chelsea's got three kiddos. That's important to me. I've got four. And, you know, Chelsea and I, we've got a lot in common. I want to save more for my kids' education. So does Chelsea. But Chelsea has fewer resources than many of us do. But because of this tax reform effort, Chelsea and everyone else at First Farmers Bank and Trust Company is getting an increase in their wages. Chelsea and everyone else at First Farmers Bank and Trust Company is getting an increase in benefits. And every community in which First Farmers Bank and Trust operates is also going to see the benefits of additional community investment. Don't take it from me. This comes from the president of the bank, and take it from Chelsea. In fact, Chelsea's already taking that additional money that she receives now on a regular basis, and she's using it to finish up an associate's degree at Ivy Tech to better herself and her own family circumstances. She's using it to save money for her three children's future college education. That's why we voted for tax reform. That's why I ran for office, is to help people like Chelsea Hatfield. So, as I say, you'll continue to hear great success, encouraging stories on this front. Let me turn to yet another topic, an incredibly consequential one, and one that has been in the media, understandably, a lot in recent days and weeks. We are in the process at the federal level of remaking the federal court system. In fact, we filled just a breathtaking number of judicial vacancies. 51 in total so far, 24 circuit court judges. Now, this is for the uninitiated, and if you didn't go to law school, you might not understandably know this, but the circuit court system is the level right beneath the Supreme Court of the United States, and they consider really important cases, thousands every year, whereas the U.S. Supreme Court only considers hundreds of cases. So, 24 circuit court judges. I'm told that's roughly 1/8 of the entire system, and we're just getting started on that front. One Supreme Court Justice, Neil Gorsuch, has been put in place. He describes himself as an originalist and a textualist. An originalist is someone who believes that the job of a judge is not to, as we colloquially say, legislate from the bench, but instead to be an independent objective referee, applying the law to the facts of a given case, not trying to inject his or her own policy opinions or philosophies or ideologies into a particular case. This is what most Hoosiers want, they told me, over the course of my two-year job interview. And this is what we are delivering. And my prediction is that before the next Supreme Court term convenes on October 1st, we will have in place yet another originalist and textualist in Brett Kavanaugh. We've invested in our men and women in uniform during what too many of us forget is an ongoing war. It's a long war. We continue to fight this war against terrorism. Moreover, we're trying to deter wars against nation states that are increasingly adventurous in their activities. Think of Russia and Iran, North Korea, China. The world's a dangerous place. So investing more to ensure that our men and women in uniform never, ever have to fight a fair fight is something I'm really proud of. Moreover, we've given our men and women in uniform and their families the first pay increase in roughly a decade. They deserved it. We've given it to them. We've delivered real reform and real choice to America's veterans through the VA Mission Act. Now, this is the most comprehensive and this is the most impactful reform to the Veterans Administration that we've made, certainly in my lifetime. A few of the major provisions are modernizing the veterans' appeals process so people don't pass away by the time the federal government finally gets around to giving them the benefits to which they are due. We're reforming the GI Bill benefits so that they're modernized to the 21st century needs and of our workforce and our veterans alike. And we further improve VA accountability. This latter category is really important to Hoosiers and as I speak with them. In fact, many of you perhaps read about the scandalous situation at the Marion VA facility where they were determined to be a one-star long-term care facility, 1 out of 5 for our veterans, simply unacceptable. And so we're holding the VA accountable for these poorly rated veterans nursing homes and requiring them to make their rating system transparent so that veterans and their families can identify a place of care and residence that's appropriate for the needs of that family and that veteran. We've given a multi-billion dollar boost to the fight against opioids. And by the way, before the end of the year, I expect that we will deliver another comprehensive opioid bill to the President of the United States, and he'll be signing that into law. To that end, I've partnered with colleagues on both sides of the aisle to try and contribute my own ideas and offer my own value add to this drug epidemic, because I can't tell you the number of heartbreaking stories that I hear, the number of roundtables I've convened where I've heard constructive ideas about how we at the federal level can work with different levels of government, our not-for-profit sector, our private sector, and other community leaders to together in a whole of society effort to address this scourge. So I filed legislation to include job training in our treatment programs, with the idea being, and this is affirmed by experts, that when people are trained for a job over the course of treatment, they'll be prepared to work on the back end and not drift back into their old habits. I've worked to fast-track non-opioid prescription drug alternatives, again, in a bipartisan effort, so that we can continue to treat patients who need help without putting them at risk of addiction. And I've worked to address symptoms of the opioid epidemic. A couple of them, our foster care system, incredibly overloaded right now. And so the reforms that we have gotten signed into law in some instances, will expedite the processing of adoptions out of the foster care system by 40%. So think of that, decreasing the amount of time someone spends in this foster care system, where so frequently they're shuttled around from home to home, into a forever loving home, decreasing that time by 40%. I'm really proud of that. And I have to commend members of my team for working very hard on that issue. We have also worked to address the spread of infectious diseases like HIV and Hep C and others associated with the opioid scourge. On the economic front, returning to jobs and the economy and wages and economic security, which is what I hear most about from Hoosiers as I travel around the state, we've rolled back the burdensome regulations that were mentioned earlier. 16, under a mechanism known as the Congressional Review Act. Now, the name of the act's not important, but I would note that this act's been around since the 90s. It was actually developed by David McIntosh, who's your congressman, but it's only been used once ever in the late 90s. We've used it 16 times to eliminate job-killing, wage-constraining, freedom-limiting regulations. Very proud of that. We've repealed portions of Dodd-Frank that have prevented our community banks and our credit unions here in Indiana from providing capital to Hoosier families and small business owners. You know, you shouldn't have to max out your credit card and or rely on a payday lender, which was increasingly happening, to get a solid business plan off the ground. This was actually happening as a byproduct of this one-size-fits-all regulatory scheme that Dodd-Frank put in place. We've gone a long ways towards optimizing that regulatory scheme now. Again, another accomplishment. We passed Right to Try legislation, giving the terminally ill access to experimental treatments and frankly, giving them hope in what is otherwise a dire situation. We've been fighting sex trafficking by going after websites like Backpage, where children are literally bought and sold. It's modern slavery, and it's occurring right here in Indiana, but we've been fighting that. We enacted the longest extension of the Children's Health Insurance Program in history. This is a federal health insurance program that actually works, and we've extended it longer than ever, and that's great for Hoosier children and America's children. So there's more. There's a whole lot more, and I'm not going to get into all the other accomplishments from foreign policy to domestic policy we've been able to achieve, but you get the idea at this point. The most encouraging thing to me is that most of these wins are team wins, and I'm not talking about Republican wins. They're not donkey or elephant wins. These are wins for the American people, and most of them were overwhelmingly bipartisan. That's a good thing. So there's a general belief, as I acknowledged earlier, that these are divided times, and there is some truth to that. I don't want to paper over the principled disagreements and the complicated politics we face right now, but at the same time, I see every day evidence, maybe evidence that you don't have the same front row seat and insight into, of bipartisan agreement. A spirit of comity and goodwill and focus on the common good that really reinforces my belief that we can come together and solve important problems, sometimes problems that have been around for decades and decades. And I try and take this quintessentially Hoosier, commonsensical approach to my work. I may occasionally fall short. If I do, I invite you, please don't hesitate. Contact my office, let me know. I strive to perfection. I'll never get there, but I am grateful for your feedback on so many fronts. So I mentioned earlier that I've been focusing on something that we've branded my Fair Shot Agenda. It's Hoosier's Fair Shot Agenda. I've just helped catalyze it in this position. But what I do is I spend a lot of time listening, not just at forums like this, but I've had my team geolocate the most distressed zip codes, or if you prefer, as I do, let's call them opportunity zip codes around the state of Indiana. These are places that have either recently fallen on hard times or have long been places where there's high unemployment, high rates of public assistance, low rates of job creation, so on and so forth. And we've actually got these geolocated by zip code on the map around the state of Indiana. And for a long period of time, I was spending half my time visiting these zip codes, walking neighborhoods, convening roundtables with the school superintendent or principal and the sheriff and the not-for-profit leaders and the head of local hospital and so on and so forth. And I discovered some really interesting things. We started to develop a policy agenda, not a top-down agenda, but an emergent bottom-up agenda that, again, we're calling the Fair Shot Agenda. And then the objective here is to make sure that every Hoosier, regardless of your God-given talents, regardless of your circumstances of birth, regardless of any intervening challenges you may have experienced in life, we want to make sure that every Hoosier has a fair shot at success, as they would define success. So I've been reaching across the aisle. We've been building support for some of these policy ideas, which incidentally, they transcend party. They're not red, they're not blue ideas. They transcend ideology. They transcend geography. The same challenges experienced in the east side of Indianapolis are oftentimes the same challenges experienced in rural Crawford County, Indiana. To that end, we were able to pass into law something called the Social Impact Partnerships to Pay for Results Act. Never again will I name a bill something that with an acronym CIPRA. I mean, that's just marketing 101, all right? But nonetheless, we got it passed. And this new law reimagines the funding and delivery of social services in this country. In fact, we allow private investors, high net worth individuals, institutional investors, banks, through the Community Reinvestment Act, to invest in not-for-profit or for-profit interventions that evidence shows are meaningfully impacting, in a positive way, social or public health challenges. So an example would be preterm births. That's a real big problem here in the state of Indiana. But there's a program out there called the Nurse Family Partnership. This is undergoing randomized controlled trials across multiple sites around the country, serving different types of populations. And as long as this thing is implemented with fidelity, we know that we can significantly reduce the number of preterm births. We can improve health outcomes for child and mother. We can improve educational outcomes for that child and mom. You end up saving the federal government through this prevention effort tons of health care money and also a fair amount of special education money. So the idea here, you're starting to get it. I see the business folks in the room. You allow private folks to invest. You shift the risk onto the private investors who will work with a service provider with the potential to replicate this success in a new geography. And then we pay back the investors only if positive outcomes are met per a contract that is signed with the federal government. The investors get a return on investment. Out of those avoided costs, the money will typically be redeployed to help more people. So I'm really proud of this effort, and I think the state of Indiana, we've been in touch with so many organizations and levels of government. They're very interested in it, and I think you'll start to see some positive effects of this. I'll quickly run through some other things that we've been focusing on, but another area that is afflicting all geographies around the state is housing affordability. If I focus on the low end of the spectrum, we'll call it affordable housing. We expanded and strengthened the low-income housing tax credit. This is something I really pushed for as part of the tax reform effort, knowing through these meetings that this is a big problem for Hoosiers. We have improved in our office the existing federal housing voucher program so that low-income people can move from where they are, oftentimes with a high level of skill and motivation, to where the jobs are, because mobility is a major issue for so many of our low-income Hoosiers. And we're convening a national task force for the first time in decades to look at this housing affordability crisis and provide us more recommendations about how we can optimize federal policy. Other things, very quickly, we're working on legislation that will help Hoosier families fund education, fund their own private retirements. So I've given you no shortage of things to follow up with, I want to leave time for questions. So I'll just close with an anecdote. And to me, this was a quite powerful experience to me. It happened just days ago. I was in Winchester, Indiana. Who knows where Winchester is? It's so impressive. A few audiences. Yeah. A lot of one-tank trips in this group. Yeah, that's great. So Winchester has this not-for-profit group called The Journey Home. And The Journey Home serves homeless veterans. And there's several of these around the state, but I'm always impressed by the quality of people and the quality of the residents and the stories they have to tell. And many are experiencing mental health challenges, substance abuse challenges, and this is a temporary way station for them to get back on their feet typically. But in the middle of this tour, in walked a lady and her young daughter. She appeared to be about 10 years old. And they had an armful of groceries. They clearly knew right where the kitchen was because they dropped them off in the kitchen. They sort of turned tail and were on the way out. And I said, "Hey, sweetheart, I've got a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old and 8-year-olds. And I like to try and connect with little kids when they're not afraid of me, right?" And this one wasn't, but she was a little bit shy. But I asked her what they were doing, why they're carrying in groceries, and the 10-year-old couldn't put words together, but her mom jumped in. She said, "Well, you see, we had to live in kind of a place like this just a few weeks ago, and we didn't have any money, and we didn't have anything to eat, and other people helped us, and now we want to help other people. We have a little bit of money." And I get choked up every time I talk about this, because little Gracie was learning a really valuable lesson, and clearly her mom is personifies to me what makes this country great, right? JFK once famously said that a rising tide lifts all boats, and I really do believe that, right? But let that not be shorthand for the fact that each of us doesn't have a role to give back, you know, outside of the market economy. So some boats need patching, if you will. And we all have God-given talents and some modicum of resources. And my guess is that Gracie and Mom didn't have a lot of resources, but they knew they had something to give. So I would just say that the federal government's really important, and I think it can do a lot of constructive things, but ultimately, what makes this country work is people like Gracie and her mom and folks like you. All of us have God-given talents, and I just want to encourage you, because I know we have a lot of leaders in this room, keep giving, keep helping out your neighbor during times of need, keep throwing yourself into leadership positions, because you can really have an outsized role. For me, I'm humbled to be in this role. I recognize we live in a country of 320 million people, many of them very well educated, many of them could be outstanding United States senators, but I happen to be your guy. And I take that responsibility very, very seriously. I'm very humbled by it. And so I thank you for this opportunity here today. God bless.
Senator, did you want to take questions from the
yeah,
audience?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
so
please.
If you have a question, just raise your hand and The senator will recognize you, and I'll bring the mic over. How's that? I know this crowd. Come on. Here we go.
I'll get it started. Thank you for your service, first of all. I think we can all agree to that, that the Indiana delegation is doing a great job. One of the big concerns, I think, on a lot of our minds here in East Central Indiana is the effects of tariffs, and I know the Indiana delegation has been fighting for our state and what's best for our state. Can you expound a little bit on what the Senate is doing? Because I know that there are some folks like yourself in the Senate that have been fighting for us in the state. So can you comment a little bit on the tariffs?
Thank you, my friend. I'm grateful for that and for your heart for service. So, look, let me start with what I'm hearing from Hoosiers. I'm not hearing a lot about this issue from sort of most Hoosiers, workers. I'm hearing a whole lot about this at the business owner and executive level. And I'm hearing a little bit increasingly more about this from people who work in our ag sector. All that said, I'm really anxious about our current approach. I think it needs to be more targeted. But I also think that the president's elevated a really important issue, and one that's been neglected for years and years and years, to be precise, about 18 years with respect to China, ever since they entered the WTO. They've been ripping off our intellectual property. They've been forcing technology transfer if you want to sell into their markets. They've stood up state-owned enterprises where they deliberately dump into the United States, imposing a 100% tax rate on those workers who lose their jobs as the Chinese companies gain market share. I could go on and on and on. So what I think the president's goal is to bring China and other state capitalist countries that engage in these predatory economic practices into good behavior or better behavior. And so with all of that in mind, I'm very much aware Indiana's the most manufacturing intensive state in the country. We don't want to disrupt our global supply chains. That's happening already. There are retaliatory tariffs, and there may be more to come on our farmers. So I think the quicker we can bring this whole thing to a resolution, the better. But how is that going to happen? I need more clarity on that as your United States Senator. So what I've asked of this administration, and frankly future administrations, this should have happened a long time ago, is we need an on-paper strategy that's coherent, that's cohesive, that's comprehensive. Call it a national economic security strategy, just like we have a national security strategy. It's written, there's a classified annex, of course, because that there are sensitive things in that document, but that is developed across different departments of government. Analogously, we can do the same thing. We could have Treasury work with the State Department, work with the USDA and all other departments of government to come up with a whole of government strategy and deliver it to Congress. This would not only make sure that we've thought through the way to get the most leverage, and I happen to believe that's probably partnering with G7 countries, working on China and India and Brazil and other state capitalist countries. And then later on, we turn to sort of the family disputes we have with more industrialized countries because, our disagreements, our differences are much narrower there. That national economic security strategy is not just something I'm opining about. I've actually drafted legislation. We're starting to build bipartisan support for that through co-sponsorships. And I hope that in coming weeks or months, this actually can become law so that we can make sure we bring this thing to as quick a resolution as possible. But I share the president's goals with respect to these predatory economic practices. But I just want to make sure our approach is targeted. And I don't have high confidence that it is right now.
I think we have time for one more question. Does someone have a question they'd like to ask the senator? Okay, just a moment, please. Lori.
This week is back to school week for many of our Delaware County kids, and I'm wondering what's happening in Washington to increase their level of safety at school.
So, on many fronts, we've been acting to address this situation. So whether it's making sure we have a more robust background check system, the Fix Nix Act, we passed that, or providing some resources so that we can keep our schools, you know, hardened against threats, so that when I drop my four kids off to school, I don't have to worry about their safety. That should absolutely be a safe zone. I'm proud that at the state and local level, where so many of these prerogatives, frankly, exist, there's been bold action, and in many instances, our elected officials have had the courage to stand up and say, we're going to need more resources to deal with this, meaning we're going to have to ask of you more since Washington's $21 trillion in the hole. I'm also glad that the state of Indiana, through our elected officials, the state legislature and the governor, in recent years passed the strongest red flag law in the country. This legal mechanism allows members of law enforcement to take away firearms from people who, with a high level of certainty, law enforcement believes pose a threat to others or to themselves, and then later you go into court and people have an opportunity to get those firearms back. So we could quibble, and I'm not going to quibble with our state about the exact way that law is constructed as compared to other red flag laws, but I think that directionally it was a very smart thing to do, and you've seen other states model their state red flag laws off of Indiana's. Many other states are considering doing that. So those are some of the thoughts I have. But if we're really going to address this problem, we do need to get to root causes. And sometimes that is frustrating when I bring that to people. They think it's a way to avoid the problem. But community still matters. Parenting still matters. Treating mental health challenges the same way we treat physical health challenges really matters. And if we're not having those conversations, to my thinking, we're just missing the entire root of the cause. And I like to solve root causes as opposed to fixing symptoms. But in the near term, I acknowledge we have to continue to focus on symptoms too. So thank you very much for your thoughtful questions. I'm sorry I didn't have time to take more. I would welcome you to contact our office and ask whatever you want to, or I've got members of my team in the back there. They'll write them down, and we can get back with you. God bless. Thanks.
Senator, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a very enlightening time, and I'm sure our members would agree with me that these are very important questions and answers that you've given us. I want to welcome Kevin Courtois to the stage today from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He's traveled to Muncie today for a special presentation. So, Kevin, if you come up and join.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you to Jay and Brenda and the entire Chamber community for having me out here today. My name is Kevin Courtois, and it's a great pleasure to be here to recognize Senator Todd Young as a friend of business and as a recipient of this year's Spirit of Enterprise Award. So as some of you may know, the U.S. Chamber is the world's largest business community organization representing the interests of over 3 million businesses and organizations across the country. That includes state and local chambers such as the Muncie, Delaware County Chamber of Commerce. Now every year, the U.S. Chamber identifies the issues most important to the American business community and then evaluates members of Congress on how they vote on those issues. So last year, for the first session of the 115th Congress, the chamber identified just 7 votes of the many taken on the Senate floor as key votes. Now, members of Congress who vote with the business community 70% or greater are recipients of this award. And I'm happy to report that last year, Senator Todd Young voted with the business community 86% of the time, earning this award and bringing his lifetime score to 92%, which is remarkable. So, Senator Young, on behalf of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Muncie, Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, congratulations on this year's Spirit of Enterprise Award. Thank you.
I want to thank the National Chamber and, of course, this chamber and all the other affiliated chapters around the state of Indiana for just doing such a good job of educating me about the concerns of American businesses and those who believe in the free enterprise system. It's really important. Thank you.
Thank you all for your time. Have a wonderful day today, and continue to make Muncie and Delaware County a great place. Thanks. Take care.